You're listening to the Music Marketing Manifesto podcast, where you'll learn how you can use direct-to-fan marketing strategies to grow your fan base and generate income from your music with no record label, radio airplay, touring, or press. And I'm your host, John Ojaka. All right, John Ojaka here, and thanks for tuning in to another episode of the Music Marketing Manifesto podcast. In today's episode, we're going to be discussing membership sites for musicians, or paid memberships, really, of all sorts for musicians. What do we mean by that? What's a membership, or what's a membership site? Effectively, we are talking about password protecting premium content that you then charge your fans to have access to. We're going to be talking about this from a strategic approach, and then we're going to be talking about it from a practical approach, you know, how to implement something like this, and of course, why you might want to in the first place. Before we get into that, I just kind of wanted to talk a little bit more about AI and some developments that have happened in that space that relate to musicians. This is something that, you know, I've been quite interested in. I've been talking about it in the podcast and in my private insider circle coaching calls, really, for more than a year now, since ChatGPT first hit the scene and the whole world caught this sort of AI fever, or this AI arms race ultimately began. I've been very busy with a lot of things and haven't released a podcast episode in a few months. And the last one was on AI, and it seems just so much is happening in that space that I think probably for the foreseeable future in these episodes, we'll probably need to do a little bit of catch up just around that, because it has such far-reaching implications when it comes to just music and music marketing in general. Going forward, it's very clear that really everything is going to be affected by artificial intelligence and really ultimately what's coming. So since the last episode, there have been a lot of developments. Some of the more significant ones are things like very recently the release of Claude 3, a new model that is outperforming ChatGPT-4 in a lot of different benchmarks, and is just objectively speaking really pretty impressive and pretty great for people who want to do creative writing, which is, I know, a lot of us, whether these are blog posts in our marketing, or whether it's just getting assistance for all of the content we need to create, from emails to, again, sort of blog posts or video scripts, or even creative projects like writing books and things like that. That's been probably one of the big challenges around AI, is just getting an output that really doesn't feel cheesy, that feels authentic and is usable and replicates our own voice as much as possible. And Claude 3 from Anthropic, if you haven't tried it as of this recording, it's only a few days old. It does cost $20 a month to get access to Opus, which is their premium model, which is, I think, when it comes to AI, if you're going to do it, just pay the $20 and use the best there is, because it's always so much better. Same goes for ChatGPT with the paid plan versus the free plan, but it's looking pretty promising. There have been an enormous number of releases in the AI music space. I want to stress, anytime I talk about AI, especially here in the podcast, my personal interest is not around AI created music. I really do believe that art needs to be sort of filtered through a sentient mind, and I don't know, we'll have to talk about it again when someone feels or there's some consensus that AI has become sentient, but we're certainly not there now. And I just don't have any interest in artificially created songs, and I certainly don't think many of you as musicians will either. But I am very much interested in using AI to be more productive. And often that overlaps with music creation. There are many products out there. Kits.ai has been one that's been around for a while that can be used to now create models around various drum sounds or guitar sounds or even vocal sounds, and then you can throw in an input and transform that input, maybe a guitar sound that you make with your mouth or some drums that you tapped out with pencils, and then apply a model of John Bonham or something that you've legally licensed to actually use. And then your pencil taps sound like John Bonham, or your voice sounds like someone of a completely different gender if you need some backup vocals, or your guitar tone suddenly sounds like your favorite guitarist. Or even more interesting are these implications around the fact that we can even go and take our own guitar tracks that are properly recorded, you know, go into a studio, lay down our vocals, lay down our guitars, lay down our drums, spend that money once, and then go in and record something in on our iPhones, and then throw it through a model, and suddenly we've got a kind of AI producer on hand. Everything is still sort of in flux and developing. The technology's there, but no one's done a perfect job of seamlessly putting it all together. But if you have a little know-how and a little will, you can now do exactly what I just described, making it more possible for regular people without a lot of money to compete, which is really, really interesting. And I think we're looking at a very interesting future where art is accessible to a lot more people. And I think there's a lot of questions around that for us as musicians. How do we feel about that? And I don't have the answers. I think there's a lot of cynicism around that because many of us feel we've worked for decades to build our skill set, and now someone can come in without putting in that time, without paying their dues in that sense, and create something that is just as competitive in many cases. So I think there's a lot of cynicism around that, understandably, I think. But does that mean the cynicism is right? Shouldn't we, as artists, want to live in a world where there are more people creating art? What is this future going to look like when everyone, if they want to be, is an artist? And what does the future look like when jobs and potentially even income are replaced decades down the line, and we are left to just spend our time doing what we feel like doing? What does the world look like? Do we all become artists? Is creativity an innate human state? Is that the world we're evolving to? Or evolving towards? Again, I don't know the answers to these things, but I think the writing is on the wall that the world is going to shift dramatically, and it's going to have it's going to transform creativity, and that's going to affect all of us. I'm not a sky is falling kind of guy when it comes to AI. I'm very excited about it. Certainly in the short term, it is increasing our productivity, making things possible for all of us that were never possible in the past. But I think as the conversation is now literally turning around AGI, artificial general intelligence, and whether or not that already exists, there are literally lawsuits being thrown around as we speak about claims being made that it already exists. As we enter that world, it is completely inevitable that things are going to change dramatically, and they're going to affect all of our careers and our lives. And I don't know. There's no live audience here, so I can't ask those questions. But I pose those questions for all of us to think about. I know it's something that I've certainly been thinking about, and I think it's really interesting, this idea of how do we feel about more and more people being able to create art. And I'm not talking about push-button AI song creation. I'm talking about genuine creativity, where the average person without decades of experience can make a song that is not only commercially viable, but just maybe more appealing to them because it's their creation and it's about their experiences. What kind of room does that leave for us? Certainly, I think in the very short term, and again, those are sort of big picture questions that aren't going to really impact our lives for some time. But in the short term, I think we're already seeing revenue loss and job loss. I don't have hard numbers on this, but I only know as a creator that I'm licensing less music for background music, you know, utility music, music that is not so much something we're listening to as a fan as much as we are paying money for because we need it as part of our jobs, our creative jobs. I'm licensing less music because there are literally fantastic music generators that can generate scores or stingers or sound pads that I can use in these videos. So I think people that have been making, musicians who have been making a living around creating that kind of sort of utility music, and again, there's certainly no disrespect intended in that choice of words. I mean purely that it's created sort of to serve a purpose, whether that's playing in a commercial setting, a restaurant, a yoga studio, or whether that's being created to be licensed through the song libraries as something to support maybe a video or whatnot. I think artists who are making their revenue, their income based on that are in real trouble, even though right this moment you've probably not experienced much in the way of a dramatic revenue loss because those playlists are still being played. I think in the relatively near future, a year, 2 years, 5 years, I'm not sure, that will sort of be gone. Those people that need to play that music in their yoga studio or create that track for their wedding video that they're editing will push a button and not only create a song that is exactly what they need, but even create a playlist that is tailored to their customer base if it's in a commercial setting. So that's something that I think musicians that make that kind of music need to really be thinking about pretty seriously in terms of shifting their models so that they are prepared for, I think, what's coming. I think artists who build their fan bases and sell to those fan bases are sitting best in that, are best prepared for the coming changes. And again, that's what we focus on around here. I don't think AI is poised in any way to sort of replace that. I think fans of music, fans of artists, I should say, are seeking more than just the song. Yes, the song and the music is a big part of it, but it's also lifestyle, it's also culture, it's also connection to individuals, and it's also a want of being part of a tribe. But I think if that's what you do, I don't think the sky is falling on you right now. But if that's not what you do, then that might be something you want to think about developing, because I think that's what it may take. There's also, of course, probably one of the last places to be touched by AI and all that is inevitably coming is live music. And that's, I think, where we may see more and more focus sort of going from fans. And I think we already see that for reasons even beyond AI, just the disposableness of the internet. Over the last decade or two, there's a real want to have that authentic experience in a live setting, and I don't know that there's ever a world where AI will be better at that than human beings are. So I think that's another area for serious musicians who want to make their life in music, is making sure that they develop those skills, because I think the internet and Pro Tools and the ease of creating music has pulled more of that out of people's business models. There's a lot more create a track, 3 days later it's up on Spotify, and you're playing social media and algorithmic tricks to drive those numbers up. But I don't think that's that viable now for most. I think that it's going to become even less viable in the future because of AI. And I think that, again, authenticity, live music, and really creating connections with fans and focusing on selling, which leads into our bigger conversation here today with membership sites, but leading into selling over just streaming is just going to increasingly be more and more important. One other final sort of thing just to kind of talk about, I guess, because I think it's interesting, and although it doesn't immediately perhaps dawn on people as being relevant to music, is the release of, well, it's not the release, the announcement, I should say, of Sora, the much talked about, I think everyone listening to this or watching this has heard about Sora by now, because it really made waves out there in terms of mainstream media, not just within the AI space, but this, of course, is OpenAI's video generator that is creating just mind-blowingly impressive videos up to a minute long that are for the most part, not completely, they've posted some bad examples as well, but for the most part, void of all of that weird AI morphing that we've all become accustomed to over the last year as AI video generators were released. Sora is doing something different. And that is that, and I'm speaking very much sort of in layman's terms here, in part because, I only understand these things so well. I'm not a data scientist. I don't know really, the nuts and bolts of how every aspect of this is working. And also because I think, just to make it simpler to kind of digest, what my understanding and what seems to be happening with Sora that makes it so significant is that it's not just trained on images and then predicting, it's not what an image should look like as it carves noise into images, like more like Midjourney and some of the other image generators out there, or more like how they tend to work. Instead, it has a bit of, as I understand it, a world model. It's a completely different kind of model that more closely understands physics. So instead of saying, well, if you want a picture or if you want a video of a dog playing in the snow, which was one of Sora's examples, it's not just predicting which pixels should go where, it's predicting how snow should behave and a puppy's fur should behave in a certain kind of environment based on certain scale. And that's kind of mind-blowing, because as we have language models already able to do such an incredible job of communicating and solving problems and expressing everything from emotions to logic to solutions, now we have models that understand how the world, kind of, for lack of a better word, around them behaves. When you combine effectively the two, especially when you put it into something like robotics, which is very much being worked on, you have, or so it would seem, all the components for, if not literally sentient, at least for all intents and purposes, an entity that acts and behaves like a sentient being. And that opens up all kinds of other interesting philosophical conversations about what is sentience and all of that. My personal feeling, as the world is talking about AGI, this first major benchmark in the advancement of artificial intelligence, is that functionally we may already be there, in the sense that not certainly not ChatGPT or Claude. This is not AGI. But algorithmically speaking, it might be all that is required for AGI when you add memory and a world model to the language model and the necessary compute to make everything work together. We may already have artificial general intelligence, or at least, again, the science necessary to achieve AGI behind the scenes. And there's certainly many rumors swirling and have been for months now about perhaps OpenAI already achieving that. Claude 3 and Anthropic are trying to sort of imply that they've created it with some of their language. It's mostly being dismissed. Elon Musk is currently suing OpenAI, claiming that they have achieved it and trying to force their hand in court to acknowledge where they're at so that they can force certain changes with Microsoft, which would then release it again to the public or make the technology more available to the public. So it's an incredibly interesting time. But what I was ultimately sort of getting at is my personal suspicion, and I don't know, I could easily be wrong here, is that we may have already achieved it, and it may be one of those things that in a few years' time, the world is kind of going, oh, we achieved this 3 years ago. I think we're all expecting this moment, almost like a spaceship coming down and hovering over the White House, where it is announced that AGI is here. And I think while the effects of AGI will be so profound, the arrival of AGI may not be quite so obvious. And I think there's a decent chance it's already occurred, and it's just not the big moment that we all expected. It's a subtler moment where we realize it's not exactly sentient, so it's more of a algorithmic potential than anything else, at least again initially, until it starts to embody until it starts to be used in conjunction with these other components, such as having memory, such as having more compute, such as being installed in a robot that can engage with the physical world around it. But perhaps the components already exist. Perhaps some of these companies behind the scenes have realized that, are realizing that, and are already using it experimentally in some of these ways. I don't know. But it's fun to think about, and it's a really, really, really interesting time. If you're kind of behind the curve on all this AI stuff and you'd like to learn more, I have re-released the Musician's AI Toolkit. It is no longer a live workshop. But the all of the lessons and the recordings of the live workshops are all now made available inside that members area. You can check that out by just going to musicmarketingmanifesto.com. And from the products and services tab, you can now find the Musician's AI Toolkit. Check it out. It's there for you should you want to up your game when it comes to artificial intelligence and use it, or learn how to use it more specifically to ultimately market your music. That's really where its focus is, using it to create marketing copy, using it to create music videos, using it to create images that you can use in your ads and in your blog posts and all that other content, create t-shirt designs and album covers, and analyze your data to find unexploited opportunities and everything else. So you can learn more about it there. Just again, head over to musicmarketingmanifesto.com and click on products and services and look for the Musician's AI Toolkit, should you be interested. All right, so that's just kind of just some, I don't know, me getting up on my soapbox a little bit and talking about AI. I hope you find it interesting. I certainly do, and I'm going to continue to kind of just report on it and keep you guys generally abreast of some of the major developments. This is something we do also regularly in our monthly coaching calls. If you'd like to take part in those, again, just head on over to musicmarketingmanifesto.com. And from that same dropdown, you can find the Insider Circle, my private mastermind, where we get together once a week, have live coaching calls. And I talk about this stuff extensively, as well as answer questions and give you music marketing advice. And then I release monthly training modules as well, filled with helpful tips and strategies that will make you a better marketer for your music. All right, so let's talk about membership sites. So what is a membership site? I can't get unstuck from calling it a membership site, which is really just something that us marketers have been saying for 10 or 15 years, but it's not really about a membership site anymore. So I need to stop saying that. It's about a membership. And we're all familiar with services like Patreon, and they are effectively memberships. So this is not particularly new. This has been around. This concept of charging people for access to premium content, it has been around for quite a while. I remember covering the launch of Patreon. It's got to be now 12 years ago or something here on the podcast when they were brand new, and they've certainly taken the world by storm. And a lot of creators have embraced this model, I think, for really good reasons. It works really well, especially when people are creating content that is hard to monetize, such as YouTube channels. And while there are many, many music creators on Patreon, it has been less widely embraced in the music space. Again, it's pretty widely embraced, but less widely embraced than something like YouTubers, who it'd be abnormal for them not to have a Patreon campaign because it's such a good way to monetize, especially when you're growing and you have a fan base, but you're not quite big enough to pull in those sponsors. And it seems to fit so perfectly with music, where we're in exactly the same place, especially if you're embracing streaming strategies and you're making such a small amount of money, but you may have a reasonable fan base. A few thousand people that care about you and your music can generate you a lot of revenue each year, but a few thousand streams, or even just a few thousand people streaming your music regularly, isn't going to generate you much revenue at all. One of the things I talk about a lot around Music Marketing Manifesto and my courses and products and in my coaching calls and all, you know, what one of the principles that is paramount to everything I've been teaching all these years is the need for musicians to embrace a sales model, to actually be selling. Streaming is great. Streaming is fine. I'm not an anti-streaming guy. But if I take two groups of musicians, you know, let's take two groups of 100 musicians, just to be random, and I teach 100 of them how to go and get more streams, and I teach 100 of them how to go and build a email list and sell to that list, and I tell each one of them to try to make $5,000, far more of them are going to make that $5,000 with a sales model. You need, in reality, a lot more than, for most of you, more than a million streams to hit that number, but the minimum number of streams, if all your streams were high quality streams and first world markets, you know, you might make $5,000 with around a million streams. Again, for most of you, probably be more like 1.5 million. And many artists are just never going to hit those numbers. Many good artists are never going to hit those numbers. Some will, but many won't. Certainly with any amount of repeatability and within a short amount of time. Whereas an artist who has embraced a streaming model and is, say, selling even an album at $15 a pop, only needs to sell 350 copies. And there's no artist out there, even the worst artists out there, can sell 350 copies. When you add a funnel to that, or even a couple of funnels, so you know you've got an upsell and a downsell, you've got maybe a follow-up promotion for a membership site, maybe you're doing house concerts later in the year. If you add some additional profit points to that, you may need to only attract 100, 150 customers, depending on what your follow-up promotions look like, to make the same amount of money. And truthfully, everyone can do that. And I'm not necessarily, well, I'm not saying that you should embrace sales and ignore streaming. You should do both, but you should embrace them both in complementary ways. But what I do want to constantly get up on a mountain and scream out to every musician in the world is, don't ignore sales models. We have this terrible habit in this industry, and it predates streaming, but this terrible habit in this industry of trying to emulate the rock stars of the world and do what they're doing. But what they're doing works because there's usually, if not at least hundreds of thousands, even millions of dollars behind them, and they're engaged in very expensive and very risky branding strategies, where you spend so much money that you create these tipping points of awareness, and at the end of it, you have a hit on your hand. on your hands. And you need to have a massive hit in order to make that money back. And we just can't do that when we have a few thousand dollars to spend. Of course, there are exceptions. You can get struck by lightning and be one of the lucky ones. But that's not, you know, hope is not a strategy. And so we need to build, we need to engage in strategies that allow us to basically scale. And that means spend money and spend $1 and make at least $1.01, hopefully more, out the other end. And you can really only do that with sales models. Again, there are exceptions to every rule. You can, especially if you get lucky along the way, you can theoretically spend enough money to algorithmically trigger organic growth with platforms like Spotify, but it's very, 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 very hard. And there's a lot of, frankly, BS and hype and a lot of the claims wrapped around that. But, you know, it can theoretically be done, but just, again, it's way less consistent and predictable as artists building their mailing list and selling stuff to their mailing list. Now, where am I going with all of this? And how does this pertain to membership sites? Right now, we typically do this by selling an album. The album is still the product that the masses are familiar with. It is obviously a collection of music that we can justify charging a reasonable amount of money for, $10, $15, $20. And that allows us to run ads, because if we have a really fine-tuned funnel, then we can profit. We can at least break even, and we can grow that fan base, that list, without losing money. And then we can go back to that list with promotion after promotion after promotion, making money indefinitely from that one sign up, from that one initial conversion. But the album is problematic. You know, less and less people feel connected to the concept. The younger generations don't connect to it as much. And I don't want to say that there's a lifespan on it, because I don't think I really believe that. And despite what people will tell you about, you know, how physical albums are actually dead, that's really not true in the independent space. It is industry-wide. You can't, you know, artists can't rely on selling physical albums if they're trying to blow up in the mainstream. The amount of physical albums they sell is not going to be overwhelmingly significant unless you're one of the flukes like an Adele or a Taylor Swift, who can release a special release or a special pre-order kind of release and make a significant amount through physical merch. But for the most part, the traditional physical album in the mainstream industry is sort of dead, but it's not dead. I want to stress this with independent artists, not because people are chomping at the bit to get a piece of plastic with a cover on it from the artist they love so that they can put it into their archaic car stereo and listen to it. That's not so much the thing. What it is that the buying triggers for independent artists are very different than the buying triggers for mainstream artists. They buy from us not because we're the biggest, greatest hit that is sweeping the nation by storm. They buy from us as independent artists because they feel a connection with us, because they're on our mailing list, because they follow us on social media or on YouTube or wherever we broadcast, and they feel a connection with us and they want to support us and they want to have something physical to commemorate that experience. So the album's still very viable. As the owner of TunePipe, my website and funnel builder platform for musicians, I see sales numbers all the time. Many artists are selling hundreds of CDs a day. There's a lot of revenue there. And I still think that, well, not think, it is. I have data to support that it is the best and most immediate way for an independent artist to sort of monetize a funnel and to scale. But I do think we need to be careful there, and we can't, the world is just going to continue to change more and more and more, and we need to have other ways to monetize. And that's where the membership comes in, or a membership site. A membership, again, is a password-protected area of your website that you charge fans to get access to. Again, much like Patreon, but where Patreon not only takes a very significant percentage of your income, how much they take depends on your plan. I believe it can be as high as 20%. If not, it's certainly commonly around 15%. Check out their prices to make sure what I'm saying is right there. I haven't looked in a little while, but they take a significant percentage of your income. That's a lot of money. You make $100,000. That's, you know, $15,000 or so that they could be taking from your revenue. But it's also, they're controlling the entire experience. They're controlling the customer flow. They're controlling the customer data. They're controlling the brand. And then there are distractions on the platform where they've got millions of other users that your customers can become distracted by or engage with, which could cut into their engagement and their spending with you. So there are drawbacks. The big pro is that it's sort of easy and people are familiar with it, but we can do the same thing on our own platforms very, very easily, where we password protect either an entire site or an area of our site, which would be more common, and create our own brand, our own portal, our own world. We control the customer data. We control the customer experience, so we can present them with upsells and downsells and tag them and create automations to follow up with them and all of those things in a much more precise way than we can when working with a third-party platform. And more importantly, we get to keep all of the money, with the exception of whatever processor we're using that is inevitably going to take a percentage of your fees, usually around 3%. But that's a heck of a lot better than, you know, those bigger numbers I was citing, like 15% or more in some instances. So there are a lot of advantages to setting all of this up yourself. And while this is still somewhat anecdotal, I don't have hard case studies on this because they're sort of just difficult to do. People tend to be a customer of one or the other. I have only a few reports from customers who have switched over to TunePipe and set up their own membership sites that they're actually converting better than they were with Patreon. So again, that's anecdotal. I can't categorically say that, you know, this is always the case, but it appears to be. So that was my concern initially, is that the brand awareness around Patreon might lead to greater conversions, but it doesn't appear to be the case. Again, anecdotally. But the way this works, and again, there are many different platforms that allow some version of this. Some are simpler paywalls. Some are complete password protected members areas. As I mentioned earlier, I launched a platform a couple of years ago called TunePipe. TunePipe is a advanced website and funnel builder and email marketing tool and music store creator and a bunch of other things, split testing tool and on, specifically designed for musicians. It's where most of my attention has shifted over the last few years, is really building out that platform and providing what I believe is the best solution out there for musicians who want a web presence. But one of the features that I didn't mention within TunePipe is the membership creator. And it's really simple to create within TunePipe. Again, TunePipe is not the only way to do this. You can even create this with an old-fashioned HTML site or a WordPress site. It's just, depending on the platform, it might be easier or more difficult or more expensive. With WordPress, there are various plugins. There are some free ones, but inevitably you end up needing to upgrade to get the features that you want, in my opinion. And they can easily cost a few hundred dollars a year, whereas it just comes with TunePipe, which starts at $20 a month, and you get all that other stuff that I mentioned as well. But the way it would work, and again, I'm going to try to be speaking a little more broadly here, but I do want to illustrate one setup flow, is that you would simply go in and create a membership group. You could have multiple tiers. You can have a silver or a bronze, silver, gold, or any number of tiers, really, and call them anything that you want, or just one tier. And you create a membership group around that, give it a name. So, for example, it could be John O'Jaka's Backstage Pass, for example. And then I can go and create pages. And when I create the page, it's as simple as selecting who has access to that page. Is this a public page, a password protected page, or a membership page? If I select membership page, then I select the group. So again, if it's a particular tier that has access to it, I can tick that. And then in order for someone to view the content on that page, they have to log in to get access. And when inside of TunePipe, when creating a product, you can select what kind of product you're creating, whether that's physical, digital, a service-based product, or a membership product. And same thing, when you create that product, by assigning a membership group, that customer will be asked to create a password when they purchase, and then they'll be sent a login link, and they can log in anytime, and they'll be redirected to your membership homepage. You'd create a dedicated homepage for that membership site. It can have its own header if you want. You can make it look and feel different from the rest of your site. Whatever you want to ultimately do. And then you've got this little hub. Now, this could be a single page, or it could be an entire sort of website within a website, which tends to be how I do it. If you've ever signed up for any of my programs in the last couple of years, like Music Marketing Manifesto, you've been inside an example of this. But again, what do you sell? What do you charge people access for? This can be anything that makes sense to you and your brand. So the obvious one is new music, and it can be that simple, a simple homepage where you have a welcome message or a video. And then every month you're dropping a new, recording, a new track, and charging people access for this. You could put a small monthly fee on this. It could be $1 a month, $3 a month, $10 a month, or you could put an annual fee on this. It could be, of course, a one-time fee, but I think that would defeat a lot of the purpose behind how valuable this is. So one of the things that I like is annual payments. So we try to close maybe a $20 or $30 sale, make it something a little more comparable to an album price. It usually pays to sort of start low and then try raising your price until you hit that drop-off point where it no longer converts, and test a little bit to see how much you can ultimately charge, how much your fans will ultimately pay. And let's say you're charging $20, $30 a year to get access to that. That also lowers that cancellation pressure. If a person is being charged every month and they're not logging in every month, which will happen to the best of us, because attention wanes, it ebbs, it tends to ebb and flow. And if they're logging in, if they're not logging in every month, the fans may tend to go, I'm just not using this, and cancel every single time they get billed that $5 a month or $3 a month or whatever you're charging. Whereas if it's an annual fee, then they're really not seeing that statement or that charge but once a year. And as long as they're logging in occasionally and occasionally engaging with your emails and content, they can still feel good about that pretty affordable annual fee because they know they're supporting you, which should be a big part of the messaging around the sale, around your selling proposition. So once more, from the fans' perspective, what this feels like is, just as you'd be promoting an album, you would promote a membership. If the prices are pretty comparable, again, you can probably justify a slightly more expensive membership. And you can make this as simple or as complex as you want it to be. I kind of brushed through that, but it could be new music once a month. It could be an archive of all of your past music. It can be a place where you put on live streaming concerts once a month. You can hold live chats. You can do anything that you want. I would advise people not to make it too complicated, or you're going to have a hard time. It's going to become this big amount of pressure for you to keep creating the specialized content. But as long as you make it manageable and you regularly release content and stay engaged with those fans in that password protected members area, then you should do quite well. And I'm seeing many artists coming through TunePipe that are doing well with these membership models. So again, what would that look like from a fan's perspective? Just as you promote an album on social media and in your email list, you're taking people to a sales page. But instead of selling an album, which is still very viable, but instead of just selling that album, you're explaining to people that you're making your music available in a different way. And what I would recommend is probably not limiting the music to only the members area, but making some of it exclusive to the members area and releasing it in advance to the rest of the world within the members area. And that will allow you to still do all of the other things, still print up that album and sell it to the people that want the physical copy. And you'll probably find a lot of your members also buy that, boosting revenue even more. But also allowing you to still release at least some, if not all of it, to the streaming platforms. And so again, you're driving them to a sales page, you're making the pitch, you're explaining how hard it is for independent artists. And by supporting this membership site, they're not only helping you execute a sort of viable model as a struggling independent musician, but they're also just supporting you in a healthier music industry. And then optionally, depending on the platform you're with, you have the ability to even upsell that. So for example, that would be a great opportunity. Now that they've bought the membership site or the membership, would you like a physical copy when the album's released? An extra $15. Would you like it to be autographed? An extra $5, and so forth. And of course, you're tagging people based on their purchases. So you've got automated follow-up campaigns to market complementary or additional products down the line. And as always, you should be continuing to engage with them as well with regular free and entertaining content to sort of win that attention so that you have the right to market to them occasionally over the coming years. So I really think that, I think through platforms like Patreon, that has already somewhat become the model, whether we connect to it in that way or not. But I think what's sort of missing from the equation is retaking control over this. It's crazy that we would spend or we would give 15% or more of our revenue. It's not always that high. I should add, and it depends on what platform you're going with, because there are other platforms that would allow you to do this as well. But it's crazy that we would give anywhere near 15% of our revenue just to do something that you can set up with a few clicks and that you can set up in a much, much cooler way that is more consistent with your brand. So that's kind of it. That's kind of membership sites in a nutshell. The marketing of the membership site is really no different than the marketing of an album, with the difference being that there needs to be supportive and clear language around the selling proposition. You're selling a better, more intimate experience. You're selling hopefully better, more exclusive content that they get earlier than others might get it. In some cases, they get content that no one else will ever get. And in turn, you're also creating a very loyal tribe because you are engaging with this group regularly and they're appreciating that engagement because they're spending money to get it. And that's, I think, what more and more, I think that's what the future of monetization is going to look like for independent artists. I don't see the album going away anytime soon in the literal sense or in the conceptual sense, but it isn't something that we can rely on being there as a point of monetization forever, especially as younger generations that never bought albums mature. And I think the solution is, without question, memberships. Whether you go out and do it through a Patreon, which you absolutely can do, or you set up something custom yourself, or you go and set up something through a service like mine, through TunePipe.com, I see this as the way that most musicians are making the majority of their revenue in the coming years. It already is for many, and I see a lot of these artists through TunePipe, but I think that this is something that we should be targeting and thinking about as musicians, because if you're not going after sales, then you are leaving money on the table, and the amount of money you're leaving on the table is in many cases going to be the difference between being profitable, being able to scale, being able to grow, or not. Because if there's not sales revenue, if there's not these $20, $30 purchases coming in as a result of every conversion, then you're most of you are never going to be able to spend money on advertising. And without spending money on advertising, you can't scale. You can't grow fast enough. You're going to have to go out there into the real world and tour and shake hands for the rest of your lives. And for some, that probably still sounds romantic, but it's very, very, very difficult to maintain. And it's very healthy. If you can do it, you should do it. There'll be no more valuable experience for you as a musician, but it isn't possible for a lot of people, people with families, people that can't afford to pay band members. And it's not ideal for people who want some semblance of normality in their life and don't want to be on the road forever. So if that's a factor for you, and it's a factor for most, then you need advertising to do that job for you, that job of growing your audience. And you can't do it if you're making 0.003 cents per conversion, but you can do it if you're making $15, $20, $30 per conversion. And if you are going to embrace a sales model, then you really, really, really should be looking at subscriptions, and that means a membership. So that's my two cents about membership sites. Food for thought. If you ever have any questions about this, leave a comment below this video. If you're listening, if you're watching it somewhere, get in touch at musicmarketingmanifesto.com. Shoot me an email if you're listening to this somewhere. And if you'd like to learn more about how you can use TunePipe, the service that I own and mentioned earlier, to set up your own memberships, then head on over to TunePipe.com. It's free to try. You get 14 days for free. Prices start at just $20 a month. If you want to stick with us, I just absolutely love the platform, and the feedback from people who've been using it has been tremendous. I believe it can absolutely help any artist that makes that switch. And me and my team are always here to help anyone who's interested in getting their website and funnel and email marketing and membership site up and running. All right. So once more, musicmarketingmanifesto.com, tunepipe.com. You can always reach me by reaching out or sending an email to support@musicmarketingmanifesto.com. Until next time, thank you and take care.
Thanks for listening to the Music Marketing Manifesto podcast. If you'd like to learn more about how you can market your music using the direct-to-fan strategies discussed on this show, then head on over to musicmarketingmanifesto.com and sign up for your free copy of the Music Marketing Blueprint. Once again, that's musicmarketingmanifesto.com.